Hey everyone, it's Scott Bland. Welcome to The Morning After and a special edition of the Nerdcast. We are taping this special episode to take political stock of the two huge legal developments affecting the president in the last 24 hours. His former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort's conviction on 8 federal counts of financial crimes, and potentially more importantly, his former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen's guilty plea to 8 federal counts, including one where he admitted breaking campaign finance laws at the direction of then-candidate Donald Trump. So here to talk about it, we've got Chris Catalago from our White House team. Hi, Chris.
Good to be here.
And also Josh Gerstein, who has been following very closely the legal side of all this from the courtroom in Alexandria and everywhere in between for the last few weeks for the Manafort trial.
Hey, guys. It's good to be back at the Politipalace after life on the road just a few miles away.
Yeah. So, Josh, talk us through the events of yesterday. I mean, you were simultaneously writing two different stories about former top advisors to the president going down for major crimes.
Yeah, it was sort of one of those really mind-splitting moments, almost literally around 4 o'clock when we learned that there would be a guilty plea from Michael Cohen around the same time. And then we heard that verdicts were coming in the Manafort case. It's a little difficult for those of us who are covering it because you're sort of isolated when you're in the courthouse. So we didn't know in real time entirely what was playing out with respect to Cohen. But as we went in and out, we knew that he was headed into court to make some pretty serious guilty pleas. But it seemed like a pretty dramatic moment. It had been building, at least in Alexandria, all day because we'd gotten an indication from the jury before noontime that they were stuck on at least one of the counts in the case. And so it sounded like they were at, you know, halfway through their fourth day of deliberations, coming to the end of the process. There was some debate about whether they were stuck on one count or stuck on many counts, and it turned out that they were stuck on 10 counts, but Manafort still convicted on 8, which is pretty bad to be convicted of 8 federal felonies for most defendants in most situations. But I agree with you. The Cohen thing in New York may be more politically salient and politically damaging to the president because what Manafort was convicted of, there were only a few counts that had anything to do with the campaign that alleging that Manafort traded on his influence to get loans. Those counts actually were some of the ones that the jury couldn't reach a decision on. And so what he was convicted of were all sort of tax crimes and other crimes that long predate his service on the Trump campaign. I think the Cohen thing is potentially much more damaging to the president.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the political exposure to the president from the Michael Cohen case. And what the Cohen plea, it describes Trump as individual one in court papers. But what does it mean? What does it seem to mean for him?
Well, I mean, it's pretty serious for a president to be implicated in criminal activity, federal criminal felony type activity. And, you know, it's hard to think of anything without going back to Watergate that sort of is on these on this scale or of this nature. That said, I will tell you, I have a little bit of a iconoclastic view on this. I'm not sure that it's the case that just because Michael Cohen says that he committed a crime and the president told him to do it, that that means that the president committed a crime. To violate election law criminally, you really have to know that what you're doing is illegal. And as long as Trump has the out that he didn't know that this kind of a payoff was a violation of election law, or maybe Michael Cohen told him it wasn't, or maybe he just thought if he went through Cohen, it was legal. I think in legal terms, the president has an out. But
that's very interesting. And of course, he also, in legal terms, has the out of being president, right? And there's that long-running question of whether a sitting president can be indicted or not.
Right. I mean, the Justice Department view is that a sitting president cannot be indicted, and we think that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has to follow that policy. So it's an interesting legal question about whether, you know, Michael Cohen could admit to guilt for something and the president might not be guilty of it. But ultimately, the only remedy that I think is on the table right now is impeachment, and that's really more a political question than a legal question. So the niceties and nuances of whether the president could be criminally charged for this are probably slightly beside the point, although obviously they're being discussed on TV ad nauseum today.
Why not, right? Chris, I want to bring you in here. The president did a rally last night in West Virginia. He was on Twitter this morning. Josh just talked us through some of the options here in terms of spinning this or explaining it or dealing with it, what have you. What exactly is the president doing, and what is the strategy that the White House is trying to build up to deal with especially the Cohen case, but also the Manafort conviction yesterday?
Yeah, the thing they're really leaning on right now is this idea that Trump has been drilling down for months now, which is that neither of these amount to collusion. I think politically—
With Russians.
And I think that politically, this is sort of a double-edged sword for both parties right now. From the Republican perspective, we started to hear from folks last night that this could really start laying the groundwork for a real impeachment argument on the Democratic side. Now, there's a reason why some Republicans are talking up impeachment now, because they feel like it's the one way to nationalize the midterms and have Republicans in this, maybe base election, and that it'll work in their favor at least for the next couple months. And we know that Democrats are not talking about it for the most part. Nancy Pelosi's statement last night did not mention it. They're sort of trying to shy away from it for the most part, definitely from the leadership perspective. Now, the problem for Democrats is if they come out and on the record say, hey, there's not enough here for impeachment yet, and this is all that ends up being out there against Donald Trump, this is all that they might have after winning the House, then they're already on the record saying there's not enough out there. So they're sort of trying to, I think, keep their powder dry, not necessarily lean on that argument because they feel like it's not helpful for them politically in the midterms. And they also don't really want to be on the record for the most part. Again, there are certainly more calls, I think, among the progressive side of the aisle saying, you know, this is a slam dunk. We've been saying it for months. This just gives us more fodder. But I think if they, the more they commit to it now or don't commit to it, they're going to be held to a lot of that once if and when they win the House. And so I think people are trying to make the calculation of what's the smartest thing to say right now.
That's interesting. From the Republican perspective, though, I mean, I understand the argument that impeachment revs up base Republicans who might not be as interested in voting as they've ever been right now. But aren't Republicans freaking out a little bit at this point after certainly, and you know, Josh made a very good point about how just because of what Cohen said, it doesn't, because of the vagaries of campaign finance law and the other legal issues at play, it doesn't necessarily mean that Trump committed a crime. But like this is a big thing, and it seems like there was kind of a, I don't know if you'd call it a breaking point, but definitely a shift in the way some Republicans were thinking about Trump's legal and political jeopardy.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that folks were talking about him as being essentially politically invincible and that nothing could stop him. And we started to hear from some allies and folks who sort of know the law coming in last night and saying, hey, he may actually be in some real jeopardy here. We did start to hear much more of that last night than you had heard before. There's still like widespread disagreement. I mean, this election coming up, there are not a lot of folks out there on one side or the aisle or the other that Donald Trump is really going to persuade, right? So they know that he's the best mobilizer in the party right now. And so he's really, you know, you sort of win with Trump or you die by Trump. And that's kind of where they're at right now. And there's nothing they could do, even if they feel in their heart of hearts that this is a problem for him. They just have to sort of wait it out and see how bad it gets.
Yeah, that's a great point. Josh?
I mean, the shoe that I'm waiting on dropping here, and I'd be eager to hear what Chris thinks about this, is the pardon question, particularly with respect to Manafort. There have been so many sympathetic tweets from Trump over the course of the last few days about Manafort, now one saying that he has a great family, he's been treated unfairly, a couple saying that people's lives are being ruined. It just seems to me that somebody who believes that people's lives are being ruined and has the power to fix the situation is going to be very tempted to do that. And the question may just be how long Trump's advisors can hold him off in issuing pardons, probably not just for Manafort, but maybe for many people. I don't think Michael Cohen, because I think Cohen has now cast his lot against the president, which—
That relationship seems like it's—
Right. That seems to be ruptured permanently. And the implications of pardoning somebody who's accusing you of something I think are probably, you know, maybe beyond the pale even for this president to consider. But for people that he feels are being unfairly targeted by Mueller or the fallout of the Mueller prosecution, I just don't see why he wouldn't do it. He's done pardons for people, you know, far less connected in situations that he wasn't even following that closely. It seems like here, unless his advisors like wrestle the pen out of his hand, which I suspect they've probably done several times already, maybe already did within hours of the Manafort verdict, how many times are they going to be able to do that before he manages to sign off on something and push it out the door? And who has to threaten to resign to prevent him from doing it, things like that?
It does feel a lot like a question of timing with the pardon. I know, you know, there's this upcoming trial for Manafort, his second one. There's been some speculation about do they wait for that to happen before. I don't know when that would conclude and what the timing would be with the midterms, but that might make some sense if he, you know, has got this verdict, he gets another one and then potentially does the pardon then.
One last point here before we wrap it up. Josh, the Mueller probe in general has been coming under increasing pressure, at least publicly, from Trump and his allies, but has now secured a conviction in front of a jury. Do you think that is going to kind of change the optics surrounding that at all, that it kind of proves in not just in the court of public opinion, but in the court of law, that there is something to what the special counsel is investigating here?
So I think the Manafort convictions are kind of a modest benefit to the overall Mueller probe and its status and its legitimacy. To have a big trial showdown and to win 8 felony convictions is a significant thing. That said, the critics of Mueller, including the president, the president's allies, can still point out that these charges really had nothing to do with the campaign. They had certainly nothing overt to do with Russia. We've heard this no collusion, no collusion. They can't find the collusion refrain from the president now. And so I don't think that this gets Mueller around that problem, that at least with respect to those charges against Manafort, that he's barking up a tree that is not the Russia tree. Now, he maybe is playing a long game and thinks if he has the trial on the tax and bank fraud charges and then the one that seems a little closer to Russia having to do with lobbying for Ukraine and for oligarchs who are, you know, in perhaps in Putin's pocket, that then we're starting to get closer to collusion. But it seems to me like it's, like I said, something that is somewhat beneficial to Mueller. But it doesn't really extinguish the main complaints that the critics of the investigation have been leveling almost since Mueller was assigned the task about, you know, almost a year and a half ago now.
That's a good point. Of course, there's almost nothing that could extinguish the complaints from some of his main critics. But it will be interesting to see, you know, if public opinion shifts or anything like that. Well, thank you both for taking the time to sit down for this special extra episode. Chris, thank you very much.
Yeah, great to be back.
Josh, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. No problem.
Get some sleep.
Thank you. I'll try.